Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, our founding father. And this is the voice of Chauncey Gardner, sometimes known as Michael Shook, your host for this week's Briefly. I am joined via Zoom by the Fab Five, who are in no particular order. Retired commercial pilot Truman Tex O'Brien, also known as the Montana Kid.
Oh, yeah.
At the controls in the state-of-the-art Gene Bosch radio studio, which is located in teeming, pulsing downtown Vachon Town. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael and crew. Yes, it is bustling. Boy, hey, the sun's shining. It's clear sky. It's gorgeous down here this morning. That's fog wonderful. Is finally lifted. Yeah. It's lovely.
It's good to have you with us, Truman.
Thank you, sir.
We have soon-to-be-published author, and I'm not sure if that's accurate. You can correct me, Gail. Soon-to-be-published author, Gail Kellner, a poet as well as novelist. She is on board, too, though island hopper that she is. I don't know exactly which island she is currently on or at. Come in, Gail.
Greetings, everyone. Ahoy.
Ahoy. Well,
I'm floating serenely on the Salish Sea. Cold but clear out here this morning.
You must be part seal or something. That water is. Well, there we go. It's good to have you here with us today. Also, we have our activist extraordinaire, motivator of voting from afar via relentless postcard and text methodology. And our resident numbers guy, as befits an engineer, Indivisible Vachon's Kevin Jones, who also knows a lot about maple trees. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. Good morning. Guilty as labeled. Thank you so much. Good to be with y'all.
Yeah. Next up is the Dixie Darling, the Belle of Atlanta, Georgia, former debutante, all-star shortstop, poet, guitar picker, and retired social worker, Lynn Kerrigan. See? Hey. A-double-R-I-G-A-N spells Kerrigan.
Oh, my God. I heard that all my life from whatever Harrigan reference that was that I never truly understood. So anyway,
anyone who hears that who is under probably 50 80. Or 55 now is going to have no clue what it refers to. But what the heck? We're old, so...
Well, that's nice thing about being a bunch of friends. We don't have to remember anything. It's great. We can kind of help out each other with the forgotten and unforgotten things. And I just wanted to say, Truman, I'm with you about the sun today.
Oh, it's
last
about time,
week
huh?
When we had one of those sunny days like we have today, unexpectedly, I kind of woke up at just the right moment to see out my window what I thought was a fire that had broken out near KVI Beach.
Yep.
Literally, it was so golden and glowing and growing. I got up in the semi-dark and walked to the intersection two blocks away so I could see what it was. And of course, it was the sun, which I had never seen at that angle or so bright before.
I
fell down on my knees and worshiped it.
I'll tell you what, you know, you got to be a true Northwesterner when you don't recognize the sun, right? Oh, my gosh. I agree.
To anyone thinking about moving here, this is what or about staying here. This is the effect of our winters on people.
That's right.
I have to tell you, I got to throw one thing in here, Michael, before you go on. And that is, you know, since I retired, you know, as you mentioned, I'm a retired airline pilot. Well, I was often all winters long. I was gone. I'd go to Mexico. I'd go, you know, places where there was sun. I was up above the clouds. And when I retired the first year, I about went crazy. Because of the overcast and how can anybody live like this, you know? Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's okay. And coming hailing from Texas, land of the wide open prairies.
Yeah.
And then big sky Montana.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there you go. Last but never least is our historian, organizer of documentation of all manner of worthy and necessary events. Future generations will be thankful for his work, and I mean that with utter sincerity. The guardian of the galaxy and the one who keeps me from confusing one time period with another, which I have been known to do. Bruce Hallman. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you, Michael. It's good to be here on this beautiful sunny day. And for those of you that aren't on Zoom, I have behind me Hobbiton in New Zealand, sort of dreaming of the summer that I will miss, like Truman. For 20 years, I've been in Australia and New Zealand every winter from January through March, but not this winter because of the incompetence of our great leader and the COVID pandemic that we're sort of experiencing, and other countries like Taiwan and New Zealand and Australia are not experiencing. So there's a lesson there for history and for us, I think.
Their loss is our gain, I'd say, Bruce.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, thanks. Bruce, one question. I mean, I understand you're not going, but would you be allowed to go?
No,
you would not. Okay.
New Zealand, Australia, both borders are closed.
They are closed. Okay.
To anybody except citizens. And then citizens, even coming from abroad, have to quarantine for 2 weeks at their own expense now. Initially, they were housed by the government, but now at your own expense.
Wow.
And I don't know Taiwan. Taiwan has had no cases for like 2 months. Wow. Australia, the last case in Australia was 29, almost 30 days ago. New Zealand hasn't had a case in almost 3 months. So it's doable if people wear masks and social distance, and if you contact trace. That's the secret. Mm. And that's what we haven't done.
Right.
That's so frustrating. Gail, you had a note there.
Oh, I was just going to give you a little ray of hope for those of us who have spent many or all of our winters in the Northwest. December is, generally speaking, very calm and clear, unlike November, which blows like crazy. And not that we can't have a December storm, but we have a lot of quiet, clear days in December to look forward to.
Yeah. Kevin.
Go ahead.
Yes, and I wanted to hearken back on what Bruce was talking about and the fact that he is not currently able to, by regulation, go to Australia and New Zealand. I think it'll be an interesting measure of America's presence on the global stage to see how long it takes after COVID is gone that these countries allow Americans back into their countries.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. That is, that's, it's, I'm not sure what word I'm searching for there. It's frustrating, Bruce, to hear that this has happened. And as you say, it was utterly preventable. It saddens me when I think about the dreadful level of incompetence that has cost. It's one thing that, well, you can't go down there to Australia or New Zealand. You'll be able to resume a trip next year if everything goes according to plan. There are thousands of families across the country who will never see a mother or a father or a daughter, a family member who's died needlessly because of this. And that's pretty damn sobering. Gail.
Yeah, just to add to that, I was listening to Ms. Harris this morning, and she was saying that 1 in 6 adults in America feel, or in the United States, feel that they are concerned about feeding their families. 1 in 3 are concerned about being able to pay their bills. And 30% of small businesses are either closed or on the verge of closing. So these are serious problems and issues that I am really grateful that the Biden-Harris administration, as well as it looks like some bipartisan folks, are getting together to begin to address the stimulus package.
Absolutely. Yeah, very much so. Well, there you are. It is Tuesday, the 1st of December, which means that in just 20 days, the solstice occurs. The days will start to lengthen and spring will be here before we know it. And I'm already behind on my gardening to-do lists. I confess, I am beat, tired, worn out, fed up with the idiocy of these politics, at times sick of the whole damn thing and feeling like I just want 2020, for the love of God, to come to an end already. I want to wake up to news that the country is actually being governed by people and policies that are grounded in some generally agreed upon notion of reality. Nonetheless, the Thanksgiving holiday did its work, reminding me of how fortunate I am, and I am very fortunate, and prompting me to once again utter words of gratitude. I am grateful, for example, for the warning received in the nick of time to beware of moose attempting to lick my car. This is a real thing. The wretched animals can smell the salt on cars from salting roads in the wintertime in moose country. And the cars come to a halt in parking lots or stop signs, and the moose will actually attempt to lick the salt off of the car.
Did you witness this at the four-way stop?
I haven't seen any moose on Vashon yet, but that would be...
If he did, I'm going to be really worried.
I think that might be a little unnerving. Yeah. Even a moderately sized cow moose is, 700-800 pounds. They are not to be trifled with. So there's your warning for the week. I'm also grateful for Christmas carols, especially this one sung by Dean Martin, one of my favorites.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low, let it snow, let it snow.
When we I love it. Somebody get me a cigarette and a martini. That line where he says, and I brought me some corn for popping, just kills me every time.
You need a little misogyny on the side with that.
Yeah. Well, Dean, as of his era, the old Rat Pack, not necessarily a real progressive bunch.
What I said, I recall
Frank Sinatra. Yeah, I recall Frank Sinatra at a reading about him once at a fundraiser, which you can imagine somebody lined it up for him, and the guy, the MC, came out and was so excited. It was Frank Sinatra, and put his arm around Frank Sinatra and ladies and gentlemen, Frank Sinatra. And I guess the microphone picked it up. Sinatra kind of turns to him and says half sotto voce, says, hands off the suit, creep. Okay, Frank, thanks. But
I like that whole bunch. They were debonair and suave and funny to me. I like them a lot.
Well, there you go. So what were briefly, because this is the briefly, and I do want to get to some other things, but briefly, how are your Thanksgivings? What, name a thing that you were grateful for.
I got one. Do you want? I have to tell you what we did. I'm really proud of ourselves. I had this idea that there are many, many, many folks on the island who have only one or two people in their homes, maybe three, and they would not want to cook a whole big turkey. Right? Just for two people or three. So I said, why don't we cook a turkey or several and have people come by and they can get turkey and dressing and they can take that home and they can have all the sides that they want. Aww. So I talked to my great friend, Cece and Andy, and asked them to host because they have a circular driveway and people could just drive in, and their home has a little alcove. So Cece, being the brilliant person that she is, put down a table. she had drinks so they could come up and have a Bloody Mary or some champagne or some coffee and chat through the window of the kitchen, because we wouldn't have contact. Everybody had their mask on. They would come up, we would chat, and then, of course, she made everything. I mean, all the sides, everything, and put them all together in a little aluminum foil thing with a top. We had 35 people. 34
oh,
people.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, I get on that list.
Y'all, and they came through at 15-minute intervals, so nobody was overlapped. And it was, as soon as one car drove up, the other couple would go, all right, see you guys. They would leave, and then the next folks would come up. So we got to chat with everyone through the window, and everyone got a meal. It was great fun.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, we had a wonderful time.
About a traffic jam on the peninsula.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Kevin, what did you have there, Kevin?
Oh, homemade cranberry relish was.
Oh.
Goes with almost everything and any time of day. So, yeah. Kudos to the chef in our house, which is not me.
Lynn, what'd you have? What were you grateful for there?
Oh, well, I was grateful for my own recklessness. I must say I'm one of these outliers who do not always respond well to directives. And so I drove myself up to Bainbridge Island and had Thanksgiving with my lovely daughter and family. And we had worked out this incredibly elaborate plan to distance and stay apart, and I wouldn't stay long, kind of for dinner and all that. And I got to see the boys bouncing on their new trampoline and all of that. I just cannot seem to live without the hormonal boost or neurotransmitter boost I get from those two wild maniac boys that they have at 5 and 8. And I ended up, it sort of went awry when her oven didn't work. This is a brand new big house, and somehow the side oven, which is where we put a tiny little turkey breast in there for all of us, just decided to malfunction. And so it didn't cook and didn't cook. And we all ended up eating very late, with me spending the night.
Oh.
And one of the kids crawling in bed with me first thing in the morning. So I am now in semi-isolation, paying for my deeds.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You got to see folks anyway.
I did.
That's good.
And I'm very grateful for that family and for my island family and for my Seattle family. And you all know who you are, my tribe.
It's good to have a tribe. Gail,
Well, you know, I am still glowing over the fact that the clown is on his way out. So I am thankful for that, and mashed potatoes and gravy in about equal amounts. So that says something about me, I guess.
Few things hit the spot like mashed potatoes and gravy.
Yeah, Bruce, they say that mashed potatoes are possibly like the perfect food if you need for nutrition. Between the butter and the milk and the salt and the potatoes, it's everything you need. Gravy's just on top of that.
That's just the gravy. Right?
I agree, Gail.
That's great. Bruce, what'd you have? What were you thankful for? Are you?
Well, I'm certainly thankful I live here on Vashon Island. We all live here on Vashon Island. I'm thankful for the incredible Vashon Be Prepared Emergency Operations Center, Medical Reserve Corps, that has really stepped up during this emergency in all kinds of ways, from COVID testing to tracing, which very, very few other places in Washington State are doing. And just the fact that even though you're seeing spikes in COVID cases on Vashon, we're up to about 40, almost half in the last, month. All of it's been traced, and so people are isolating. And so I think we're in a good position. I'm grateful for that. Also grateful just, in our bubble, we have, my son and daughter-in-law and 3-year-old and 5-year-old boys. So they were around. So we decorated the house with all the, turkey things and Thanksgiving things and pilgrims and all the sort of stuff that you collect over 50 or 60 years of it being in a household. And so it's really, I'm very thankful. But most of all, to be here during this pandemic in a place like Vashon that takes it seriously. Mm-hmm. We're not South Dakota.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. How about you, Michael?
Oh, gosh. I would echo what everyone else said, especially being grateful for living someplace where folks are observing the protocols, and it's kind of becoming second nature for me. It's the pitiable thing is it's really not that hard to do, to remember to have the hand sanitizer. I have that in the truck with me. And if I have to go into a store, they've got that there. I've got my masks and maintaining his social distancing. Very grateful for that. So, and then we had a delicious ham. We got our half a pig from a lovely little farm operation down near Olympia that my daughter recommended to me. It's a bunch of young people. It just is great to see some folks there, 35 or so, farming away. And man, I'm telling you, that pig, I am so grateful for that pig. It is delicious. Holy cow, it's a good ham. We're still chewing on it. There you go.
All right. I have one more thing to be really grateful for.
Yes.
And that's Brian Brown, that he had the foresight and the thought to gather this group together. And he picked some really, I think, amazing people, smart, witty. And I'm just grateful to be a part of it. So there you go.
Yeah, he's a swell guy. My life would be greatly impoverished had I never met him.
Absolutely.
It is, however, beginning to look like Drumpf is going to be the herpes virus of our body politic. He may go into remission someday, but rest assured he will erupt again, making his painful presence known. A development that was especially disturbing to read about was his effort to change the rules regarding the hiring, placement, and dismissal of civil servants. These changes will make it easier for the outgoing President Orange Plague to install whomever he wishes in different lower-level sections of civil servant jobs, and which will make it impossible for the incoming president to remove said appointees. The upshot is Drumpf is attempting to pack the government with Trumpian loyalists. Anyone have any thoughts or other insights into that? What you have, Lynn? Oh, you're muted, Lynn. There we go, demutifying. No, you're still muted.
Got it.
There you go.
All right. So I was just going to say the one other thing I wanted to be grateful for ties right into what you're saying, which is the strength of the courts, regardless of their political orientation, mm-hmm. to seem to be holding the line about the rule of law. Mm-hmm. I think that all of the challenges to the election results and some of the other questions that have come before the courts about some of Trump's misdeeds, or hope for misdeeds, you know, has been adjudicated, I guess I'd say, pretty fairly and pretty balanced and reasoned. And so I think that I am really grateful for the courts holding the line on the rule of law. It mm-hmm. made me happy because I've been kind of terrified about Trump appointees. But good people, I think, know where their real allegiances should lie, which is to the country. And, you know, you hear that with Chris Krebs, the guy who was the election supervisor person who was fired for saying it was the most secure election ever. You know, longtime Republican put in place by Trump. But, you know, I saw him on 60 Minutes Sunday night, and he just had a very measured commentary about, no, you know, what one person wants does not trump the rule of law, if I may use that.
Yeah. Use.
So it was delightful to hear that, and I'm grateful to them.
That is good. Bruce, you've talked about that. That's in a way is kind of what you spoke about with the, you know, the deep state. mm-hmm. right. stepping up. And
yeah, I mean, the ship of state is like an ocean liner. I mean, it turns, but it turns slowly. And I mean, Trump may attempt to pack the bureaucracy in any way he can, but that's all by presidential edict. It's not by law. And that can easily be changed. And Congress can, if Congress has the will to stand up against the executive branch, has the ability to change that. The danger is that Biden will move too slowly in populating those agencies. I mean, right now, as he's appointing these cabinet officers, they should be appointing sort of what happens in parliamentary democracies, shadow bureaucracies, people who will shadow, in effect, the people who are in the office right now. And on January 20th, we'll step in and we'll correct and change those malfeasances that are happening between now and then. So it takes a coordinated effort, and I'm not sure the Democrats are organized enough to do it, but they should be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Gail.
One of the things that concerns me about it is, and I do appreciate that there are many Republicans out there that don't go along with this kind of thing, but there is an arm of the Republican Party that's doesn't seem to respect the idea of fair play or following the rules, and that does concern me. These kind of what seems to me very underhanded moves, Mitch McConnell being one, you know, being the number one perpetrator of that. So I look forward to, I hope someone can give me some reason to hope that Georgia will get pull two Democratic senators out of there and set Mitch aside.
Mm-hmm. What I'm loving is the fact that Trump is saying, oh, you know, the election is so rigged down there. Don't even vote. It doesn't matter. If you voted, you know, he's telling all those Republicans not to vote. It's going like, what? You know, are you stupid or what?
Yeah, I want to get your thoughts on this, but I wanted to interject real quick about what you said, Gail, about there is an element of the Republican Party, of course, that are Trump loyalists, Trumpists, and they're not going to change come hell or high water. But my news feed from the National Review has had some great articles lately, including a whole editorial from the editorial staff of that magazine, just saying, you know, enough is enough. Start cooperating with the transition. This is disgraceful. And those were their words. You know, the country has got to come first. Let's get on with governing it. So when the National Review is doing that, you know, there's a pretty good block of Republicans, I think, who understand the necessity for working together for the good of the nation. So, Kevin, what do you know about, have you got any news about the runoff election? What are the chances there?
I think the chances are good, you know, between boycott the vote on the Republican side and that it's all a fraud, and the fact that Trump is apparently now going to be campaigning in Georgia to reinforce that message, I think is probably good. You know that he will not stay on script. He's got a lot of grievances these days that he just has to share with his followers. But I think that, you know, the litmus test for Georgia is going to be January 5th in the runoff elections. A lot of credit has gone to organizers, you know, specifically Stacey Abrams, and what is the basically sustaining the power and the resiliency of the community of which she is a member. And it just shows, I think, the power of relational organizing. And when you get a phone call from somebody you know, you're more likely to follow through than if you get a postcard or a text from somebody from somewhere else. Right. Not that those are not good. Every message is good. But in my mind, it's the power of this community organizing. And where else, all right, where else can we mobilize communities in that way? And I think that'll be our challenge over the course of the next 18 months.
You know, Kevin, what that reminded me of was when labor organizer Joe Hill was hung for disrupting the capitalist system and the people that were in power at that point. He said, don't mourn me, organize. Mm-hmm. And that's the only, to me, that's why I became a social worker. It is the only salve for some of the conflicts that I have felt about this government, which alternates between winner-take-all capitalism and sort of the human rights liberal kind of progressive order of the Democrats. And I think as a social worker, I would just say I'm into that, Joe Hill, and thank you for those words.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that back and forth that you mentioned is, of course, what we're going to experience. And for those of us on the progressive side of the aisle, you know, it's with relief. But yeah, building really more durable and sustainable communities, I think, I would hope, would perhaps create more stability in the electorate, more consistency in who we send to be our leaders. And it's not just the national level, although there are some very key states in 2022 that we're already starting to think about, but also at the state level, you know, which communities here in Washington state have similarly suffered the consequences of Georgians for so many years of not really being represented, not being respected, and not being listened to. We have those communities right here in Washington state as well. So I'm really looking forward to developing that kind of an insight and the relationships where we can be helpful to those communities as they strengthen and go forward from here.
One of the keys is that, you know, the Biden administration and the Democrats have to realize that they need to pull that sort of moderate wing of the Democratic Party, of the Republican Party, into the Democratic tent. Whether it's going to be called the Democratic Party or whatever, it's got to be a great party of the center. And it's got to include those disaffected Republicans. It's got to include those moderate suburban Democrats. And it's got to include the sort of more progressive wing of the party, you know, the Bernie Sanders and the AOCs, all in one large sort of collaborative party. You know, if they can't do that, we're going to see a resurgence of Trump and that back and forth that Lynn talked about. And my sense is Biden has the ability to be another FDR. We're going into a massive depression in the next 6 months, even with vaccine coming along. I mean, the damage that's been done to the economy in the last 12 months, well, 9 months and the next 2 or 3 months, is going to be devastating. And unless unless Biden can take the reins of power and the Congress working together to come up with a New Deal type recovery program, we're going to see continued strife and continued division. That's what's going to unify us as a country, is sort of recognizing we have an enemy in the virus and we have an enemy in sort of the way the capitalist state has dealt with the economy to this point. Not that there's not good things about that, but there are things that have not been dealt with that need to be dealt with. That's going to be the secret to the next 12 months, 24 months. In the next midterm elections.
Can I respond to that and say I was very heartened reading the New York Times on Sunday, because Pope Francis had an incredible opinion article in there doing exactly what you talk about, Bruce, in terms of how do we quit thinking of ourselves as Democrats and Republicans and kind of think about values and think about reinvention of ourselves on all these fronts. And if you will indulge me for just a minute, I want to read some of his words because I can't translate them as well as he does. He said, basically, we have to remember that the danger in a crisis is never total. There is always a way out. Where the danger is also grows the saving power. That's the genius of the human story. Where humankind has to act is precisely there in the threat itself. That is where the door opens. This is a moment to dream big, to rethink our priorities. what we value, what we want, what we seek, and to commit to act in our daily life on what we have dreamed of.
Wow.
I don't know how we pull that off, but I think that to have more people saying this is not and should not be just about politics. This is about the survival of our state, our nation, in its finest self. So I hope, too, that we can find mechanisms to get that done.
Absolutely. That, well said, Lynn. Gail, what you...
Well, I would just to quote Leonard Cohen, Pope Francis and Leonard Cohen somehow seem to be in about the same category for me. Leonard Cohen once said in one of his beautiful lines, I think in that Hallelujah song, it's
right.
Crack is where the light gets in. And I think that, you know, even I think Truman, like the beautiful story you shared with us about how, you know, you managed to make a difficult Thanksgiving into a generous and fulfilling one. That's just one example of what I think many people all over the country have done and found ways to be together. I mean, perhaps, you know, another example just amongst us, Bruce, I don't know if your family, your children lived with you all the time, or has the pandemic brought you together? And so that you have this really close time with your children. I mean, there are many, and Kevin, I mean, Trump has provided a certain, though backwards, opportunity for us to come together and rethink our American values and our system of government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, I was just thinking along those same lines, Gail, the, you know, the notion that in another 50 some days, I have to go check how many till the inauguration. You know, then Biden and Harris will have their opportunity. And I think, as Bruce says, they're already influencing things right now. I think it's going to be interesting to see where they find leadership. You know, we see leadership, for example, in the House and the Senate and the White House. But there's other centers of leadership, right? There's governors, there's mayors, and certainly there's the people. And as we just recounted the other day on the number of coronavirus cases, I think in November was 40,000 new cases of coronavirus, the highest monthly totals we had seen in the history of this virus in the United States, has been half that, 20,000 a month. So we're clearly headed for more strife in the healthcare. And I do hope that people will recognize that despite our current leader's suggestion that this is all a hoax, that people will unfortunately probably have to experience a disease or a loss in their own families. But it's necessary that we see the reality of this and that people do stand up and say, we can do better than this, right? And finding those centers of leadership to actually cause change, I think will be the difficult recipe that Biden and Harris will face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think my internet connection cut out there for a bit, but I came back in when, Bruce, you were making some points, and that to me is going to be crucial. I like what you said, Kevin, about there are all these opportunities for leadership and for that cut across all aspects, all parts of our culture, our society. And sometimes, you know, this is going to sound corny, but just observing the protocols and smiling at folks and saying thank you and have a good day and making an effort to be gracious in our communications and interactions with other people, it just sort of enhances the sense of well-being, of we are connected. And then when you translate that back up to the presidency, when we have a vice president and a president who can, they have got the opportunity to really do that, to leadership, to inspire to really say we can come to our better selves and do this. Bruce, what?
Well, what you're talking about are norms. Norms are not written down, and norms are not legislated. And what we discovered and what Trump sort of uncovered and sort of dug up in the American psyche is the fact that norms can easily be broken. And so what we operate on as sort of what's acceptable behavior, there's no limits to that, potentially. There's no restrictions. There's no legal restrictions on what Trump has done. And so it's going to force us as a nation, as a people, and as a government to sort of try and understand how we take those norms and translate them into sort of actual practice rather than being norms. Can we legislate them? Can we develop policies? Can we develop legal constraints that will prevent another Trump from taking over the United States and causing the damage, the long-term damage that will be done? I was talking to Pam this morning, my wife Pam this morning, about Trump and sort of will the United States ever get over Trump? And she had a pretty insightful thing. She said, yeah, but it'll take a long time. We still haven't gotten over the Civil War.
Good point.
And that's, you know, and that's 50 years ago, almost 140 years ago. You know, there'll be lasting damage from Trump unless we address how we sort of regularize these norms and make them and have some power behind these norms rather than being norms that can be just easily broken.
So
thank you.
One of the things that somebody else had pointed out earlier about Trump being a catalyst for the change that's occurred. One of the things that I thought about, I mean, he's going in and lopping off the heads of all these departments. And part of that is to reduce government. I mean, that's the kind of the Republican, you know, mantra that we want small government. We want to get rid of these big bureaucracies. And I'm wondering if this isn't a great opportunity for when the Harris-Biden ticket comes in, that they can reorganize these things and actually maybe streamline them and make them better. So maybe, you know, maybe this lopping off the heads of these people might end up being an okay thing. Kevin?
You know, I think you have a really insightful point there, Truman. And I think the path that you follow to achieve a more streamlined, efficient government really matters. I spent a little bit of time working at the Boeing company where some advisors had come in to say that you have a much too heavy management structure. All the good companies have a lot, you know, much different ratio of managers to employees. And so the leadership at that time decided we need to cut our management ranks. And my thought was that, you know, these other companies who achieve these ratios, I would say probably did so by implementing processes and procedures and mechanisms to allow for a smaller management overhead, not just lop off 30%.
Exactly.
Right. So I see that Trump is lopping off the 30% and hoping to achieve an outcome, which is just not the way to go.
Well, and if I can jump in here, I mean, just for a second, I mean, you look at Boeing, I mean, they cut out that management level and the 737 MAX was the result of it. They lost those processes that had made Boeing the gold standard of the airline industry, and they eliminated it, and that's the consequence.
A dreadful one at that. Lynn, what do you have? We got a couple of minutes left.
That's right, and I just want to mention that Pope Francis actually had ideas for what we could do, and it seems like a lovely thing to begin to close our show with. He said, God asks us to dare to create something new. We cannot return to the false securities of the political and economic systems we had before the crisis. We need economies that give to all access to the fruits of creation, to the basic needs of life, to land, lodging, and labor. We need a politics that can integrate and dialogue with the poor, the excluded, and the vulnerable, that gives people a say in the decisions that affect their lives. We need to slow down, take stock, and designed better ways of living together on this earth. So I would say this is not just Trump. It's Trump and his excesses, capitalism and its excesses, population growth and its survival mechanisms. It's a time to think differently, I hope, and maybe able to do it.
And we can look, goodbye, but we can look at ourselves too and participate in that.
Absolutely.
That's great.